It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis now at 10 p.m. right here on 77 WABC, airing in the New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at WABCbizradio.com. In fact, our new website, well, actually, it's the same website, but the new address is mybradio.com. A little easier, mybradio.com. And, of course, on the 77 WABC app. This show, Mind Your Business, on the legendary 77 WABC is all about you. Every single week, we seek out and interview C-level executives and business leaders from all types of industries and ask them the questions that are on your mind. Gain business advice and strategies on so many professions and business categories, including real estate, leadership, communications, financial planning, time management, hiring, customer retention, and so much more. Stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, where you'll gain solid business advice to get you ahead in today's business world. Well, as we do each week, we open with some thank you. Special thank you to Pesach Tropper, the show's producer, thank you, and the entire team here at Bottom Line Marketing Group, who plays an important support role, and of course to the great team at 77 WABC, Jose, Matt, Chris, Brian, Justin, thank you. And of course, also, special shout out to Sam Scher. Thank you for your coordination of tonight's show. I'd also like to give special mention to the various channels that Mind Your Business is syndicated on. Mishpacha Magazine. In fact, this week it features the interview that we had with Greg Chalker of Capital One. He's in the C-suite of Capital One. Pretty cool. You could find that by picking up a copy of Mishpacha Magazine. And of course, the interview itself you can hear by going to mybradio.com. We're also on C-Suite TV, C-Suite Radio, Audio Boom, iTunes. Of course, we have our dedicated YouTube channel, and it's all episodes are available. In fact, tonight's guest, you could hear the interview we had with him a couple of years ago, where there's additional perspective that he he's going to share tremendous perspective tonight, but he shared tremendous perspective in the past. Tonight's guest is none other than Ira Zlotowicz. Ira, at the age of 21, was the youngest president of any top 10 mortgage brokerage and has continued to break industry records since. Ira started Eastern Union Funding in 2001 and has since grown it into a over 100-person firm, closing over $3.5 billion in national loan volume annually. Recently, Eastern Union started LP Servicing. That's a disruptive equity division that services the real estate industry. With that intro, we give a very warm welcome to Ira Zlotowicz. Ira, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Thank you very much, Yitzhak.
We would be remiss if we didn't open with the passing of your father, a great individual. I'm going to turn it to you, but as you know, it hit me hard as well because I had the honor of working very closely with him for 3 years, many decades ago.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's untimely passing. I mean, as God fearing, everything is destined, and it's timely from then. Just it was, he was going through a short sickness, and we thought he turned the corner coming out, and then it was suddenly just everything broke down. And, I know he would want that everything, the legacy continues and life goes on, and from all the kids and the family going back to what they were doing before and continue to hopefully bring out, the positives that he brought up, he raised within us.
I mean, just to talk about a quick takeaway that I had was always, of course, everyone sees it in you, but just the focus on the goal. I mean, he put out 2,000 titles for a publishing company to put that out in 4 decades is really mind-boggling. It's hard to put a frame around it. I know that when I learned from him and the connection over the years, it was always keep your eye on the goal. Whatever it is, there's speed bumps, there's road bumps, there's things tossed in the way, but just kind of crush right through it. Just focus on the goal. That was probably my number one lesson that I learned from him.
100%. I think that, made it easier when he's doing the work of God and
right.
Leaving over titles that his slogan was the written word is forever. And, you know, truly that his legacy be left in writing and hopefully with all the people he touched. Definitely his kids and my mom.
And I think at this point, again, it's opening on a very emotional point. But now we must jump into the LP servicing side of Eastern Union. This is the disruptive side of the of investments in the real estate industry, and we're really going to present this entire division in the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Now, you're the founder. Let's before we get to LP servicing, Eastern Union Funding. I mean, $3.5 billion annually. Wow. Okay.
Thank you.
It started in 2001. Tell us a little bit about the journey.
So it was a little bit of a rough journey. You know, the industry has changed drastically, as we saw, you know, a couple of weeks ago. You have Amazon changing the world in that sector. People thought, okay, there's online. Now they're merging the online to the actual retail
brick and mortar,
stores.
Yeah.
Brick and mortar. And I think, you know, the technology and data and information is also changing in our space as well. When I started in the business, you know, banks, it was all about bricks and mortar. How much is this a building worth? It's per unit, per square foot. That was the lingo. Today, it became financial engineering. So it's, what is the IRR, the internal rate of return? What is the cash on cash return? What is the preferred return you're going to get? What's the cap rate? Those are the lingos that went in. So with everything over these last, you know, it's 20 years since I'm in the business, 16 years since mm-hmm. I opened up. And, you know, it started out where it was a lot more driven on the relationship that people had with the lenders.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, relationship's important, but more important, or even to get to the point of relationship, it has to fit into a certain level of a box. And that box has been starting to get streamlined by many different lending institutions. So in the beginning of the career, it was very easy to win over business, have a good relationship with the bank. Someone else didn't have that relationship. That was my value add. As time went on, many people felt when it came to getting a mortgage, they were able to get the same interest rate and the same terms as the competition. So what was the value add to get people to switch around and change? So several years ago, we made a heavy, heavy investment into technology.
Mm-hmm.
We have the only commercial real estate app that has all the calculators and rates and contacts and comps and everything someone can need for free, no password, under the Eastern Union name, download in the App Store and on Google as well.
Okay.
We invested heavily, doubled down on relationships. We built a department called QTS for quality term sheets. It focuses on just getting people in the firm, making sure they have the best deal possible and making sure they don't miss any single lender. And then we start an equity division, which one of the products we do in-house, and one product is a sister company. And that really, these three things together, and it's all from God, but these are the three things together really took us to the next level. And we think that the equity was really the game changer, because when you lead, when you make that first phone call, you could tell people, I have good relationships, so does everybody else. Mm-hmm. I have technology, so does everyone else. Mm-hmm. I have better data, I have better execution. But everyone uses those as sales pitches. When I can help you bring you equity, you're buying a building, you need partners, I can help you. That difference was that defining change for us. And it opened up a lot of doors. Business went from 2015 to 2016. It went up 20% when the rest of the market was relatively stayed flat. Going into this year, we're fortunate enough that we're going into this year halfway through the year, and our numbers are up over last year when the rest of the industry is seeing a slowdown. So is there a slowdown in real estate today? Definitely. Are we seeing an increase? We're seeing an increase, increasing our market share, which, as I said before, it's all from God. What we believe we did to make that difference was, you know, the equity division, and then this LP servicing really took things to a whole new different level for us.
Now, before we get into the specifics on LP servicing, if I may, and I apologize if these are basic questions, but just for the benefit of the listening audience, what is the difference between a general partner and a limited partner?
Okay, so very good question. So, again, when I first came into real estate, when someone buy a building, it was typically they bought the building themselves, just like you buy a house.
Mm-hmm.
If you bought a house, for $300,000, you put together the deposit, the down payment for $75,000, you took a loan for $225,000. You didn't take partners in your house. The same thing happened with buildings. For the most part, commercial real estate was bought by someone had enough money together.
Mm-hmm.
They buying a $1 million building, they put down $250,000, they borrowed $750,000. If they couldn't afford it, let's say the building went to $1.5 million and they only had $250,000,
right.
In that case, they would go and see someone else that was also a buyer of real estate and say, you know, let's buy this together, either half 50-50, 60-40, 75-25, one-third, mm-hmm. two-thirds, and they pretty much went in evenly, even risk, even reward, mm-hmm. and one of them would take a little bit extra money to oversee and manage the property. as time started progressing and the internet allowed people to buy things on a more national basis and data, it was people knew more things that were going on and banks and Wall Street started lending and there were opportunities to get bigger checks and bigger funds, people said, why don't I start taking in friends and family? So in a transaction where somebody buys a deal themselves, they're the partner. There's only one partner. If somebody takes in friends and family, then legally, how is it broken out? Who has the say to do what? So general partner, that's the general partner. General, you know, similar to have like a general manager in a, here in, in someone who follows sports.
Right.
Have the general manager. Yeah, the GM, he makes all the decisions. There can be many partners. So the general partner typically is the one that is executing all the contracts, all the agreements. The limited partners are limited. They're limited partners. And they have just a limited say, limited rights within the transaction. Typically also, if something goes sour and the bank wants to look to somebody to help them out, they're going after the general partner, the GP, versus the limited partner.
Now, you touched on this earlier about the new division within Eastern Union Funding, and that is LP servicing. And we're going to kind of look at it from a very, you know, from various different angles. At what point did you see this near? What year was it, 2013, 14, 15? When was that aha moment that you said, you know what, this is just the next natural area of growth for Eastern?
So the, breaking it down into two parts, realizing that equity was the next growth, and it was just a matter of figuring it out, probably came in 2011, 2012. We started realizing that people needed equity. They wanted to buy larger transactions. And we were, started to lose deals because some of the competition would be promising that they would arrange or invest with their clients. And I realized that if we could figure out how we could do this formally, we'll be able to, that'll be our competitive advantage. So, you know, a lot of times we're sitting here in New York City and, you know, financing real estate, you know, when it comes to financing retail, and retail's obviously getting attacked today, but the lingo would typically be a bank would call up and say, oh, there's a retail store. What are the sales per square foot? So even if that store goes out of business, that grocery store, but this location is strong enough to another tenant. And that's, they can see if they're making money. In Times Square, the sales per square foot, they don't justify the rents they're paying. So the, how do they get, how is the first creative person, did they get a store to open up there? The way they got a store to open up there is they went to the store and said, listen, how much money do you spend on advertising? You advertise all over the place. If you had a store in Times Square, and how from your advertising budget, so you could afford to pay $100,000 a year in rent, but you have an advertising budget. Look at the billboards there. Right. Could you put another $200,000 just for the sake of having a store there? So $200,000 comes from the advertising budget, and $100,000 comes because it makes sense for the rent. So when we opened up the equity department, we didn't open it originally. You know, it's not, you want to do everything that makes money in its own right, but we opened it originally as a way to be able to help clients. So the high moment was that we could figure out a way to make introductions and, you know, anything along the equity line that will help us open up the door to a client. And once we're helping him, since we do mortgages, our primary business, and there's no one better than us, we're tied for first at worst in any category. So it's just a matter of, you know, a client giving us a shot. How do they hear about us? So that's when we started to play with different ideas for opening up the equity division. A couple of years later, we formally opened up an equity division. We brought on Mark Belsky, and he ended up, we learned, that, you know, which was big education, that, you know, there's a lot of regulation. It's no longer in real estate raising equity. It's securities law. And through that process, you know, they spun off a separate company. It's a sister company. They had to work on their broker-dealer. They would have to get licensed there. And then we had the ability to help people when it comes to actually raising equity. Through that process, and we realized how transactions are going down, we realized the new opportunity, which came out to be LP servicing, which is, it wasn't not so much as an aha moment. It was, you know, it was, it was an offshoot, a natural growth offshoot. Of if you're wearing a glasses to be creative and see the curve, this was came there. The aha moment was opening up equity in the beginning.
My guest this evening is none other than Iris Lotto. It's founder and president of Eastern Union Funding, and we're going to be spending quite some time talking about their new division called LP Servicing. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? Well, look no further than WebsiteWithBrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500 or visit websitewithbrains.com.
Are you looking to receive a greater return on your commercial real estate investments? LP Servicing, a division of Eastern Union Funding, the leading commercial real estate funding firm, can help you strengthen your investments, broaden your network, and handle your headaches. For more information, visit lpservicing.com. LP Servicing provides services that enhance your ability to get the deal done. It's just that simple. Visit www.lpservicing.com. Again, that's lpservicing.com. LP Servicing. Turn your investments into something bigger.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC and worldwide at WABCBizRadio.com. My guest this evening is none other than Ira Zlotowicz, founder and president of Eastern Union Funding. And we are talking about their newest division, LP Servicing. In fact, Ira, before we even go further, LP Servicing, what is it all about?
So as I said before, the way people bought real estate of late is that it's called a syndicated deal. Mm-hmm. A GP, a guy who you know is the buyer of real estate, ends up going to his friends and family. How often is that
they really need to come up with extra money?
It's very, very often.
Very often. 70-80%.
By the way, you know what I found more is not so much it's very often, is that it's all about the famous three letters, OPM, other people's money. Right. So someone could buy a deal and get their friends and family to put up the money, and they promote them, which means they keep a percent of the profits after their friends and family receive their first monies out. And why not? Number one. Number two, if someone has $250,000 in the original example, he could buy a $1 million building. Now he could buy a $5 million building because he needs to put up, let's say, $1.25 million. He raised $1 million from friends and family. He has $250,000 himself. So he has control of a larger building, and he's making more money in the same time he's working it. That's one. Number two is that even when I meet people that own real estate for 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. many times people are caught up. You know, they say first impression is everything.
Of course.
That happens in real estate now a little bit in reverse. That person who bought his first building, he went to an investor. Mm-hmm. Investor could have taken advantage of him, or investor could have said, you're just starting out, these are the terms we're going to do. And he's been buying buildings under those terms. And he's been focusing on buying real estate and managing it and being successful. And now he may step back and say, I hear all over, there's this money coming from all over the world, there's different funds. You know, what's out there? Maybe my investor's taking for me, you know, maybe my investor is taking for me a higher preferred return. Maybe they're taking, they want for me a larger percent every year. And there's other investors would rather invest with me compared to the other investments and take a lower return. So in effect, just like there's a concept of refinancing your mortgage, rates can't get much lower now, but on the equity, maybe I could refinance my investors and I could say, I don't want to go back to my old investors because they demanded a 10% from me. And these new investors might take 8% or 8 to 6, 6 to 5, and so on and so forth. So there's always that, I don't know if it's that need, but there's always that want and look because that's their business. If they could figure out how they could pay 1% less on a $10 million, $100 million, $200 million deal, that 1% annually adds up to a lot of money, and that money goes straight to their bottom line.
So at its core, we understand what the effect is and what the result is. But what does LP servicing,
servicing does is it takes what happens now down one track. So right now what happens is the guy buying the building, mm-hmm. he buys the building for the $1 million example, go there, he has to put up 250, he goes to his friends and family to put the 250 up. And that's it. But each person writing the check, each investor that's writing a check to him, writes the check and goes home. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, every single person that's writing a check, mm-hmm. how come they don't syndicate their piece? Right. Now, if you think about it, there's not a new concept here. Right. The new concept is how most people saw this, and this is why I saw it on a very large scale, is that fund to funds. What happens if someone wants to go ahead and invest? They hear all these great stocks, they hear all these great startup companies that are coming out, and they want to invest in them, mm-hmm. whether it is an Uber type of a company, right. or when Netflix came out. A lot of these companies need $5 million at an investment clip. Who wants to invest $5 million at one place?
Right, such a risk. Yeah.
Right, so I ask somebody, when it comes to investing in technology, how do you make a decision to invest? Right. Because I make sure I'm invested in 20 deals. So I know few are going to lose. So if I only have $5 million to invest, I can't invest in any one deal because it's $250 per deal is too little. So there are funds that put together money, and they are, in effect, fund to funds. They put together, I could invest $5 million in this fund. They're going to charge me an annual fee. They're going to charge a percent of my profits. Mm-hmm. But because of that, they'll take my $5 million and let me actually put it into 20 different companies. So the same thing I saw sometimes in real estate. I met someone who was buying a $100 million deal. He needed to raise 20-something million dollars of equity or $30 million in that deal specifically. Mm-hmm. He had to put some capital capital back into the building. Mm-hmm. And his minimum investment threshold, he was only taking $2 million checks. So I asked him, everyone was writing a check for $2 million? He goes, no. Sometimes a few people get together and someone like co-syndicates and they put it all together. They bring money from their friends and family and they charge a promote to their friends and family. I said, but that's like a double charge. You're charging them and they're charging the others. He says, yes. But at the end of the day, and this is really where the how moment came to me.
Right, okay.
At the end of the day, and this is like along the lines of what crowdfunding is, he said, there are so many people that have money, don't have access to deals. And really the how moment is that these people, you know, I explain it that when someone is a sophisticated investor, mm-hmm. he thinks along the lines of three terms. Cash on cash return means how much am I making off my money every year. Mm-hmm. Internal rate of return, how much am I making if I take the whole life of the investment, including the sale price and the profits, what would my return work out to over the life of the loan? Then a preferred return, even though 1 year it's not throwing off enough cash, but how much will I for sure get before the splits go? Mm-hmm. That's the lingo they talk. An unsophisticated investor thinks of two things. I better not lose my money. And bottom line, after everything, what is my return?
Right.
So if my money's in the bank, it's safe, and I'm making 1%. Mm. That's what they either think. So in that world, I realized that let's take it down and make it to a formal process. Why can't we open up a product to make it easy and acceptable to everybody that when they're making an investment in a piece of real estate with somebody, that I could turn to that LP and say, you just invested $100,000 into a deal. Why don't you go and ask your friends and family if they want to join you in that investment? And then let's say you could bring together instead of 100,000, most people, their influence, we found that whatever amount of money you're ready to invest, your friends and family will probably join you 3-1. Meaning if you're putting in 100,000, you probably have 10 friends that will follow you at 30,000 each. And that number brings you a total of $400,000 investment. So, and the way the education process works out is that I show them how they would end up increasing their IRR, their overall return, by 4%. So instead of a 15%, they get a 19%, let's say, if that's what it's supposed to be. And you're right, their friends won't make the same 15% they're making, net of all fees, but at least their friends have access to a deal. You know, the safest deal I find is to invest with someone you know, someone you trust, someone you that has their own money in the game. So now that friend, the $30,000 person, has a friend putting in $100,000. They're even with that friend. There's one big legal catch. Okay. And I'm using the word catch, and really to be stronger type of words, is that it's called an accredited investor. There are a lot of securities laws. And I'm not a securities lawyer. I'm not licensed securities. I have no intention of personally getting licensed securities. I want to stay in the arena where a license is not even required. And the reality is that there's laws that you can't just, if you haven't noticed, there are no advertisements on this show about, oh, you want to invest in a real estate deal? I'm buying this building, invest with me.
Right.
Because there's laws about advertising. And if you advertise a deal, then you have to have certain filings and certain things, which I don't want to go into here, speak to your attorney and accountant how it works. There's a lot of laws there. But one of the most basic laws is that the government sets forth and says there's something called an accredited investor. Mm-hmm. Accredited investor is somebody that the government defines as rich. I don't want to go on what it means, what the standard is. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but an accredited investor is what the government says is they're called rich. They're sophisticated. And all that really means is there's a lot of laws that oversee the process. But if someone is not a accredited investor, then if you want to take money from them, there's a lot more laws and disclaimers that you basically have to give, like, you know, on a cigarette box, general warning.
Right.
For when you're taking money from non-accredited investors, it'd be big, bold lettering that says you will and can lose all your money, in effect. That's the idea. So a lot of people shy away because there's too many legalities and regulation that goes with it. So in everything I'm discussing here on this show, to be able to make it clear, I'm only discussing this whole step of taking money from accredited investors. So now accredited investors is not somebody that is making millions of dollars. It's someone that's called rich is making in the ballpark. Again, I don't want to go into legalities of it, but just so when you're listening to the rest of this show, you don't think, oh, it's not relevant to me, is that accredited investors typically in the range of someone that's making above $250,000 a year in each of the last couple of years, or they have a net worth of over $1 million, not counting their home. So it's not that foreign for someone that lived a life, put savings away, or someone that's a professional making that kind of money. But The main idea is there's a lot of laws with it, but the starting point is that there are plenty of accredited investors. Look around you when you go to an event. There are people who own small businesses, doctors, lawyers, there are different professionals. They're making $500,000 a year. They could maybe invest $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 in total maximum a year. Where's their access to deals? And if they did, how do they not underwrite it? The aha moment is, and what I love about it is I get to help people and make money in the process. So when I step back, I'm helping three people. The GP needs equity.
Right.
I'm basically working with LPs and supercharging them, teaching them and educating that why don't they go out to their friends and family and network. Now, there is some carve-outs, by the way. If a person is truly a friend and family, then there's some carve-outs of accredited investors. But again, I'm not an attorney, but you want to ask your attorney how that works. But I'm helping him because how am I helping the LP? The LP is writing a check for $100,000. By the LP taking his friends and family in and now bring accredited investors and now bringing a total of $400,000, he is protecting and controlling a bigger investment. So he has more say at some level, and he's increasing his return. The accredited investor is really winning because instead of putting his money in the bank or risky investments, he has no access to investments, he could put in a solid investment that his friend is coming over to him and taking. So the product itself is really the education is that I'm educating the LPs what they could do. The product where we make our money from it is it's not so much to make our money, it's more of a service where we are willing to do this one issue that the limited partners have. The limited partners come and say, listen, I love the idea. After they hear it, they understand right. They make money. They understand they're helping their friends. They understand they basically became a syndicator without the headache of running a building. Mm-hmm. And when they put it all together and they check all the legalities, they say, but I don't want to deal with the headache. So I say, I'm willing to deal with the headache. I'll do all the back office servicing. And, you know, many people just take this idea, and if they want to take this idea and use it, I just say one thing. I'm in the mortgage business. If you're taking this idea, please let the GP know that you're increasing because of me. So and try to push the mortgage in my direction. And that's what's happening. So the way the product works, that if somebody says, I love this idea, but I'm a doctor, I can't deal with all this. So of the fees he's collecting every year from his accredited friends and family, and from that money, we will take a small annual fee to do all the back office work, coordinate the legal, coordinate the follow through. We're not going to sell anything. We're just going to be a back office product.
Now, I have so many questions, but a first question would be, let's say someone out there, you know, has not been approached by a GP. He's not been approached by a relative that has been, but he says, you know what, have some money on the side. This sounds like a great idea. Could they also contact you?
Right, so perfect. So there we have going back how we originally started. So mm-hmm. we originally started as an equity, to try to do pure equity brokerage. Mm-hmm. And we broke that up into two different products. The one product is that sister company, which I said is primarily being run by Mark Belsky. He runs it he's based in New York. You have Yitzi Hallen, who's based in Maryland, and they're licensed, and they're the driving force of that department. They typically work on larger equity checks. So they're typically going to work on checks if someone looks for a total equity need of $3 million or above. But most transactions in America, what I found very interesting is you run the numbers, you hear all these billion-dollar deals, most transactions in America, the average purchase price is $12 million. So that means the average investment need is only $3 million, 25%. Right. And most transactions are less. So we found there's a big need is how do we help people when they need less than a $3 million check, less than a $1 million check, or they just need a $100,000 check.
Right.
So we have a department, a matching service, being run in the office by us, by Ephraim Perlowitz. There's no licensing required there. I'm not selling. It's pure an advertising play. And there's someone on two sides of the coin. Someone could call up Ephraim and start a relationship with him and say, I'd like to invest in these types of transactions, these types of deals, these types of returns I want. And he has the name in a database. So now, on the other side of the coin, along comes the GP, is doing a deal with us. And the GP says, Ira, I'm looking for this deal. I want to raise equity. And you know something? I'm looking just for maybe, could you find me one or two or three more investors? I'm short the last few. So I'd introduce him to Ephraim, the matching service. Through advertising, Ephraim will advertise. Again, there's a lot of legalities, what he can say, what he can say, the same thing, follow to make sure it's not under this need for a securities law license. He will then go out, look at the database and filter it. We have state-of-the-art technology that's able to track and understand what this deal, the returns, what the people who, the LPs on the other side have said they want to invest. And now he narrows down the list and he has a relationship with these LPs. He's building a rapport with them. And then he will send them the information and he's able to send them. If it's a larger deal, then the same process will work where potentially what, that's what Mark Belsky is, the same back-end technology to keep track of people that are writing checks of $3 million, $1 million, $10 million, $100 million deals, funds, and all different ends of it. So, yeah, so we have on both sides of the coin. The 1-2 punch now is when I meet an owner, I'm able to tell an owner, I could, if you need to raise equity, I have two ways to help you. The conventional way,
right,
is what I'm going to bring to you new investors that might want to invest with you. If you want me to act as a broker, you have to go through my sister company, Mark Belsky, and for that, he charges a commission to do it.
Okay.
Or through a frame as a matching service, he'll make introductions to you. But I tell them, more importantly, why would you go to new people first? Why don't you first go back LP servicing? And that's what I honestly think is the right thing to do. You're helping everybody. This is your 10th building, sir. You're buying your 10th building. Why don't you go back to the investors that were with you and show them a way that they can make more money and you both win? They go out into the street. They'll go to their friends and family, not advertising it all over. I mean, the street is their block.
Right.
They go raise money for you. Or, again, I'm using words here, raise. There's a lot of legalities to the raise and all that. I want to say that I'm talking in layman's terms. Mm-hmm. Why don't they go out to their friends and family? And if they bring you a bigger check, you win by having the number you need. You're not paying anything extra for it. They win by getting, bottom line, a net return that was greater than they expected before. And they're really helping all those friends and family that they have.
What's the best way for someone to find out more information about this service?
So either on our website through easternuc.com.
easternuc.com. And
they can go straight really to LP Servicing. And in LP Servicing, they have a very cute cartoon video. That's
good,
an LP Servicing.
One
shows you through the perspective of the GP, and one shows you the perspective of the LP. What I personally like about this product, I tell people, is that in general, the nature how we were successful in our debt business is that it's all about full transparency. So when we deal with people, it's all about trust. We go with the coin, the most trusted advisor. And what I like about it is that when I, on the debt side, I'm fully open to the bank and to the borrower about everything going on. Over here, what I like about it, here's a product where I'm able to sit in the same room with the GP, with the LP, amazing, with the accredited investor, show them how each person makes money. Each person understands the amount that each person is making makes sense for each person across the whole food chain. And at the same time, I'm making money in the process. So not necessarily making money on the equity side of things, because it could be that they just take my idea to do it themselves. But usually they can reciprocate by saying, you know something, I have to use someone to get me the mortgage. You know something, let me use you. So we in effect become, as Eastern Union Brand, we complete the capital stack. Instead of just getting you 80%, I'll get you all the way to the 100%.
One of the points you just raised there is something I want to get back to after the break. But my guest this evening is Ira Zlotowicz, founder and president of Eastern Union Funding. And we're talking about their newest division, LP Servicing, here on Mind Your Business. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? Well, look no further than WebsiteWithBrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit WebsiteWithBrains.com.
If you own a business, you've got competition. So you have to be different. The number one proven way to be different is to write a book. Think about what The 7 Habits did for Stephen Covey and what The Tipping Point did for Malcolm Gladwell. At Black Card Books, we have a system proven to position you as an authority in your market. Join us for a 2.5-day boot camp, September 22nd through the 24th, and learn the steps toward becoming a successful author. Visit publishabookandgrowrich.com/MYB. That's publishabookandgrowrich.com/MYB. Increase your influence, your sales, and your income. Go to publishabookandgrowrich.com/MYB.
And we're back. Mind Your Business, right here on 77 WABC. My guest this evening is none other than Ira Zlotowicz, founder and president of Eastern Union Funding. And we're talking about their newest division, LP Servicing. By the way, you can find out more information by going to lpservicing.com. Again, that's lpservicing.com. In case you just tuned in, no worries. The Tuesday following the airing of this show, it will be available at wabcbizradio.com, wabcbizradio.com. And, of course, all the past shows are on that platform, and this show is no different. And, of course, there's going to be a video presentation of this show as well. Now, Ira, one of the questions that just came to mind during the last segment is, I mean, I hope I'm not putting you on the spot with this question, but just, you know, people are scratching their head and saying, you know what, I'm going to have to pay a percentage. I'm joining this limited partnership. Can I just do this myself? Do I really need LP servicing?
So it's a very good question. That's like the number one question that gets asked, actually. And like I said before, I like the fact that, you know, these are discussions people bring up. I think even our FAQs on the site, we address this question.
Okay, thanks.
Is that, you know, it's really on twofold. One is when an LP, after I educate an LP, mm-hmm. like some of your listeners are going to go to the site and watch the video and say, you know something? This sounds like a good idea. They call their attorney, they get approval, and they decide to go on the next investment and do it. Can they do it themselves? They could 100% do it themselves. And, you know, not only that, if, you know, I'm looking to get the mortgage, if I'm working with the GP, I'd actually help you, guide you, how to do it yourself if you want to do the LP servicing.
Wait a second. The folks there at LP servicing are not going to be happy with this.
So you're right. But I think that, like I said, I built the business, and the model is you want to help people first, and I want to be honest first. So, you know, and the same thing my debt business. You know, my mortgage brokers, when I would go to a meeting and I ask a person what offers he has on the table, and I'll analyze and I'll say, based on what you have, even though mine sounds better, yours is a better deal. And the new salesman will kick me under the table and say, I don't understand, I brought you in to close the deal. Why are you telling him that? And I'd rather go by the most trusted advisor. So for me, it's more important. I may lose a deal. Like they say, lose a battle, win a war. I'd rather, on the other end of it, know that when I tell someone it's the right deal, then, you know, you could trust me. So the reality is, you know, you can really do everything yourself. You know, you look at someone's doing work in their house, they could do everything themselves. Certain things they bring in help, certain things they do themselves. And I found that when it's all about the right price point, pain and gain. Is it worth doing that service yourself? So in this case, when the LP is me making a lot more money and it's not their expertise, to have a firm do it and, you know, we're not making money on a per transaction. The total number we're getting of all the money this LP is making, this LP could be making tens of thousands of dollars from this investment. We're getting a measly $5,000 a year, and we have to deal with the legal, deal with distributions, answer all of his friends' questions, and those questions be a lot of questions and relatively amateurish new questions. What is a mortgage? What is a, it says IRR, what does it mean? And it says a preferred return, how does that work? So
I mean, that's what God created Google, I mean.
Okay. But I can't answer them that if right, I'm doing okay, the service right, here, you know? So it's, so based on that, and because of that, so there's a part of me that says, I would like it. I'd rather spend my energy to find another person that I'm going to help out, because the real money's going to be made not by my LP reps earning a commission on the $5,000, which most of it has to go to a live person to actually get paid to do this work.
They'd rather
go and use their time then. If they're helping here, they'll turn to the LP and say, listen, I'll guide you how to do it yourself, even if you wanted. Can you please introduce me to the GP and try to get the GP to use us for the mortgage, and this way they make the money in the mortgage end of it. So that's one part of it. But what we find is at the end of the day, almost every LP that we're talking to that comes to the end of the line triggering to do it, they say, you know something, for that fee, you could deal with it. Not only that, I'll tell you differently. I called somebody up and told him the idea. He goes, Ira, it's a great idea. You know, I've been doing this. I just feel bad for my friends. Not feel bad like in a bad way, but I want to help my friends. And I take money from them. And you know what the problem is? Not only do I get the benefit, I don't promote them, so I don't make money off them. I'm dealing with all the headache. If I could go ahead and I want to use your service just to do the back office work for me, because I don't have to deal with it, and everyone will pay proportionally their amount, and I'll be off the hook from that. So we priced it at a point where I'm not looking to make any money there. It's like going back to what I was saying before about, you know, the advertising loss leader. This is an amount of money. As I put enough together, it covers another salary of someone else to go ahead and go do the work. And I'm spending a lot on technology to allow, you know, people to track things on a better tech or app platform. So that's on their level. But you touched upon something before. Right. When you asked the question, actually, it sparked something, is that, you know, a lot of times, sometimes the credit investor might say, why am I going through you, Mr. Mm-hmm. LP, my friend? Why don't they go straight to the GP?
Okay.
In that case, I found, you know, two main reasons why it doesn't happen that way. Number one reason is that the credited investor is not putting in enough money that the GP would want to deal with him. Mm-hmm. So using an example, of the typical example that when I use it is I say someone's writing a check, the LP's writing a check for $250, right, and he ends up finding 10 friends to write a check for $75,000 each. In that scenario, the GP doesn't want $75,000 checks. He wants someone that could write him a check $250 and probably several times a year. Many of the accredited investors, I write a check once a year, maybe twice a year. Mm-hmm. So that's number one, hitting the minimum. Number two, is like I said before, I helped a client of mine that built a crowdfunding platform internally. And we got to the point they were raising $8 million a month at an average check of about $75,000. And it was their platform. I was showing them the sales side, the technology side, and how to put those pieces together. And what I learned from there is how strong, when someone is not sophisticated in an area that they don't know about, then they rather just like make less and be secure. It's like I find it myself that if in real estate, I can know real estate. If I was making an investment in tech, as much as I know about tech, if I don't invest often in tech, I would rather go with a friend of mine that's investing in tech, let him make some of my money that way. So when you look at it from the outsider, why wouldn't you just cut out the LP, go direct? There's a certain comfort because here's the reality. In this scenario, what happens if something goes wrong on the deal? The $75,000 person cannot afford an attorney to fight it.
Right.
His investment's not big enough.
Right.
The $250 fellow does this all the time. He probably could afford. Number two, if we all join together and we're $1 million investment, then as the group, we could split the cost of attorney to fight. So someone who's typically, think about that, a credit investor comes home to his spouse or her spouse and says, darling, I have this investment. Why is the person taking money from us? If it's such a good deal, why didn't other people give the money? That's the number one reaction. Now he says, darling, you know the guy we're friendly with in the golf club? He's going out there and he makes investments all the time. He's very wealthy. He's investing $250 of his own money. He doesn't need us. If he wants, he'll allow us to join him. But for the headache, he wants some fee. And after we get our money back, we'll make a little bit less than him. There's no thinking.
Right.
Go do it. And that's really what I'm trying to create, that limited partners become mainstream, that they take friends and family. And, you know, I think that with crowdfunding and the laws changing to allow people to go to a broader set of investors and much smaller checks, I think, like, you know, I was out and, you know, went out to a restaurant the other day and I see a bunch of teenagers there. And when the bill comes, they split the bill. So I know my day to split the bill is that everyone out of the pocket take money. Oh, I owe you this. Last week you owe me. And they go over here. They take out their phone. And I don't know which technology they're using, but 3 seconds later, the person who's paying the bill already has in their account the full bill. They swipe their card, or actually Google Pay or Apple Pay, and they're done. So the world, I believe that 5-10 years from now, when someone makes an investment within the confines of the law, and I want to be the leader in this space, they're just going to turn around when it comes to real estate, turn around to their friend and say, I'm investing. Do a digital signature, follow, you know, make sure you're here, and then boom, and they raise the money. So they'll commit to put in a dollar, and for every dollar they put in, they'll bring in multiple dollars behind them. So that's really the LP servicing is the beginning of letting people know and educating them. The first reaction I get from someone is, all right, why would I do that? I don't want to get the headache, my friend. I said, I don't understand. Why could the other guy do it to you? Right? And at the reality, he has no problem doing it. And there's really a bigger difference for you. You could do the same thing as him without the headache. And that's where it goes.
Now, to find out more information, again, lpservicing.com, lpservicing.com. Another question I have to ask is that, is it just, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, do people just call up and they have to wait on hold for 10 minutes and then hit some a dial pad? Or is there, I mean, you mentioned it before, but a person could call and just speak to someone and get real information, find out what's going on with their funds. Is it really that easy?
Okay, so your question, I really appreciate the candid questions, because like I said, I'd rather be, you know, if I wasn't clear, that means be
Thank
more
you.
Transparent.
Thank you.
So you touched on it a few different points at once. I am never a financial advisor. So the only thing that I would ever be doing in this process of LP servicing would only be the one educating you on the information that has been provided to you by the GP or provided by the LP. So if you would get if an accredited investor gets a statement and they don't understand what it means, I could educate them on that process. But this department will never get a license unless the government changes the laws. But meaning in today's laws, how it works, we're staying within that with just a administrative service. And that's it. We know real estate. So on that end of it, we're not dealing with that. We're not there. So we're blending a three levels of technology here in people. Is that number one is that obviously to fill out the initial form, you can fill out a form online, but more importantly, we're encouraging and building out the staff that someone should speak live to. You know, his name is on the site there, his information is Efrayim Perlowitz. You should speak to him live and tell him the types of deals you want so you could add it to our database. But there's going to be, and then when an actual deal comes in, they will be sent via email. We're in the process now of migrating, just like we migrated our debt side of the business, the mortgage side. When we submit a deal to a bank, we submit it through a digital platform. And each banker on an app could actually make an offer on an app. Mm-hmm. We're moving into that same direction. We don't expect to automate the money to flow through that way, the same way, but at least streamline some of the process. So when it's going to come to speak to, when it requires a human being, Efrayim has an amazing team behind him to whatever questions or answers you need, they have a whole team to answer those questions. But the parts that don't require a team, well, there's information is on the site, you can fill out a form on the site, but it's not really as complicated because a person's filling out a form, they're waiting, and they're going to build a relationship. And when a deal comes they're interested in, they could call up with questions to educate them through that process.
And again, that website is lpservicing.com, lpservicing.com. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Are you looking to receive a greater return on your commercial real estate investments? LP Servicing, a division of Eastern Union Funding, the leading commercial real estate funding firm, can help you strengthen your investments, broaden your network, and handle your headaches. For more information, visit lpservicing.com. LP Servicing provides services that enhance your ability to get the deal done. It's just that simple. Visit www.lpservicing.com. Again, that's lpservicing.com. LP Servicing. Turn your investments into something bigger.
Since 1848, the quality of Herzog wines has been appreciated by royalty as well as those who aspire to it. Located in its state-of-the-art winery in Oxnard, California, the Herzog family produces a wide range of wines combining old-world value and new-world technology. These wines have made Herzog Wine Cellars the most award-winning kosher winery in the world.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. My guest this evening is Ira Zlotowicz, founder and president of Eastern Union Funding. And we're talking about his newest division, LP Servicing. And of course, you could find that more information by going to LPServicing.com, LPServicing.com. Well, Ira, the time goes very fast when we're here on the air and there's only around 5-6 minutes left. If I may, just still on, you know, you talked about the status of the real estate today, and we know on some level it's challenging. You hear about brick and mortar stores that are closing. Then you hear, of course, about Amazon, and they swallowed up Whole Foods a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you know, so you hear about all types of deals. Some people say they're good deals. Some people say they're lousy deals. How is someone really supposed to know to spot, a great deal? And how does your firm really assist with that?
Okay, so it's a very good question. It's a longer answer than the next 5-6 minutes.
Okay,
it's a lifetime
sorry.
Going through.
Okay.
But I'll try to really give, you know, what I find, like, you know, cut through a lot of the myths.
Okay.
And again, it's very easy for me to answer this question now because it's not about my product. It's just in general. People call me all the time. Is this a good deal? Not a good deal. So I think the most important thing to realize is that, like, people have these myths. If it's such a good deal, why didn't someone else buy it?
Right.
And then if it's such a good deal, why didn't he already raise all the money? If it's such a good deal, why this, such a good deal, why that? And what I learned is in business is that everybody really has their core competency, their core expertise. And if someone's job is to really, they know how to buy right, they typically not the type of person who has relationships and building out, you know, they know how to buy and run a property. Their strength is not really to go ahead and go raising money. And on the other end of the spectrum, you might also find people who are very successful in their investments. And when they say it's not a good deal, quote unquote, it's compared to other deals. Like when I hear someone say it's not a good deal and I do my research, I go back to the person and say, what did he mean it's not a good deal? He goes, I didn't say it's not a good deal, but the deal's only throwing off X percent. I have 9 other deals on my table that are better than that. Now, take the flip side. I meet someone who told me he doesn't want to invest because someone told him it's not a good deal. I said, do you have any other deals on the table now? No. Or what else do you have on the table? His return is less. I said, it's just a matter of where your starting point is. So I tell people when I give a real estate course, I say the first thing you have to decide as a real estate investor, as an investor, is how much money do you have to invest and risk and lose, you know,
okay.
Number one. And number two is what return do you need to make? And you're going to find, if you did a survey of your friends, the next time you're talking to friends, just as an example, mm-hmm. what return do they consider to be a good return? They can give you different numbers. So if your friend needs a 10% return and you need 6, when a deal comes up that says 8% return, your friend is going to tell everyone, not a good deal. For you, it's the greatest deal in the world. You're accustomed. So the same example, I'm sitting here in New York City. And in New York City, you know, returns throw off almost nothing because people buy them for their great-grandchildren. And on the flip side, there are people say, I've never invested in New York City. Craziest investment in the world. You don't make money. I'm going to buy in a different state where I can get a cash flow return. And the person in New York says, you're crazy. In that market, there's no the real estate values don't go up. So you get some cash flow, but what's it worth? And there's always that debate back and forth, left and right. So I find you want to really focus on and reconcile why, who, and what is telling you what, why, and when. And then based on that, the next step is also is that some people, their expertise is not raising money. What I find very interesting, I once went to someone and said, let me raise equity for you. He says, no. He told me the returns he's giving out. I said, I could get people be thrilled to take a less of a return. He says, it's not worth it to me. I said, what do you mean? He says, if I went out into the street and I let you speak to people and word got out that I'm trying to raise money, that means when I go on the other side to buy a building, I walk in to buy a building. You know why I win that building? So you're right, I'm losing on the return here. But this building was $21 million. It was on the next, there was another offer for 22 and a half. You know why they sold it to me? Because they had confidence that I have the money, I'll deliver. If we're to get to, so there's so many variables playing. So therefore, you have to cut through everything like everything else and ask it. And this is why I believe this LP servicing is really ripe to take off and really just make it mainstream. Because that accredited investor doesn't know what to do. But when they actually have an anchor, not just someone giving them advice, and the anchor turns to them and says, I am actually investing $250. I invest multiple times a year. I invested with him. And I understand it may not be the greatest deal, but it's a good deal. And for right now, I have more cash than I have to put it out. And I'm putting up. If I lose my money, you lose your money. We're both together.
Right.
That helps. And therefore, like I was saying before, is that when I'm not an expert in technology companies, how to value tech companies, mm-hmm. so I would go to a friend of mine and know that I'm paying a double fee, but it's worth it to me. That's the same thing that happens over here. So is it a good deal, not a good deal? All those things are getting comfortable. It's asking a lot of questions. Being a detective, don't make assumptions. Ask a lot of questions. And whoever gives you bad news or good news, tell them, why did someone else tell me just exactly the opposite? And listen between the lines what works better for you and your investment needs. Ending at last is mm-hmm. that somebody that has their money, that they all they care about is to retire with this money,
okay.
Then that person doesn't need a deal that throws off cash today. They could buy a vacant building that one day will be rented because they don't need the money today. On the flip side, if you are living off the money, you need your return. So when someone says bad deal, good deal, they could have been just reflecting on their own specific needs.
Now, on LP servicing, I mean, this is, you know, a fantastic offering. As you said, you even did it, you know, really to help people. Naturally, it's a feeder for Eastern. You know, perhaps, you know, what's like the most complicated deal? Like, how many people can get involved in a deal? Let's say somebody goes around, okay, I'm going to have 20 friends, or is that already like, all no. right, this is crazy?
So that answer, forget about where the laws draw the line.
Right,
some people
okay.
say it could be 100 is legally you could have, and
okay.
depending on different things more. This is all a matter of the preference of the GP. And you could have crowdfunding sites. Some GP says, I want 3 people to write me a check. I know I'm paying them more. I want to deal with 3 people. But that's where I step in. I said, I'll create the vehicle. You only deal with 3 people.
Wow.
I'll work with them to deal with their 10, 20, whatever the number each on each person. But to the same token, talking about a level of technology, to go back a little bit to the last question,
mm-hmm.
that one of the things we built, we have the state-of-the-art app, probably the only commercial real estate app that really provides a value for a real estate investor.
Mm-hmm.
It has calculators, it has rates, it has comps, which shows you buildings that sold in the neighborhood.
And again, how could they find the app?
So that's on the App Store, Eastern Union Funding. The app okay. is there as the company name.
Good.
But one of the beauties that the app has is that the app has for free, you don't even have to log into the app. I didn't want, you know, people are skeptical when it comes to real estate, giving their passwords, their information. Little do they know how much is available about them publicly anyway. But nonetheless, they can go onto the app anonymously and they could type in any address in the United States and the app will show them what recently closed in the neighborhood.
Wow.
So the number one thing a real estate buyer and as a broker, as a lender look at is you're buying this property for this amount, but based on this price, how much of the building that sold 3 months ago sell for? That's the starting point. Am I buying into a good deal? Is the deal healthy? Question number two is, what is the financial makeup with the deal? So sometimes it's possible to get involved in a worse deal, but have a better term with the sponsor. You're better off than a different deal, and these things go. So therefore, that's why I find LP servicing is gonna really take off, because it's providing a value. I would like it to take off and figure out how I could be the one doing the back office at a price point that's profitable for all parties involved. Wow. And that's what we're going to be working on over the next few months to perfect that.
Ira, in 60 seconds or less, any final takeaways for the listeners of Mind Your Business?
My listen, you know, the joke in real estate is, you know, people say ROI, return of your investment. Right. I think it's return of your investment. Focus more on not losing money. So don't let someone tell you how great a deal is. Focus on how bad a deal is. If you could live with the bad, then go into it. And that's my advice. You want to save your money. It's a lot tougher to recoup your losses than you'd rather gain a few percent a year than have a setback of 10% even and have to recover from that 10% setback.
Ira, thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you very much.
Wow. Ira Zlotowicz of Eastern Union Funding and, of course, LP Servicing. You could find out more information about their fantastic new division, lpservicing.com, lpservicing.com. Well, this wraps up another great edition of Mind Your Business. Tune in again next Sunday evening at 10 p.m. for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Safliff. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Safliff has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.